Good afternoon. My name is Ricky, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And it's truly by the grace of God that I stand here before y'all today clean and somewhat content. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to share, and to be honest with you, this was not my intentions. I came down to Ocean City this weekend primarily to just get some rest. But I was asked downstairs would I come up here and do this meeting, and it's ironic, it's because the topic is getting outside help, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with y'all just where I am, and I'll let you kind of get into the topic of this getting outside help. You know, I'm a guy that comes from Northwest Washington. I was D.C. born and D.C. bred, and when I die, I'll be D.C. dead. And I tell people that because that's my home, and where I lived at, I lived uptown, and anything above uptown, anything up above 14th and Spring Road was considered uptown. And I grew up in a fairly decent neighborhood, and I grew up admiring all the hustlers. Those were my role models, you know. And when I grew up, all the hustlers was driving Cadillacs, Lincolns, and Deuce and a Quarters. And anybody who don't know what a Deuce and a Quarter, that's an electric 225. I'm going to try to help you out with this thing. And my role model was a guy that lived across the street from me. And this is a guy who I admired because he had a canary yellow Deuce and a Quarter. And I would get up in the morning and I would go to work. I would go to school, and I had to be at school at 9 o'clock. And that Deuce would be parked across the street. And when I come home in the evening, about 3:30 in the evening, the Deuce was still parked across the street. And in the evening, he would come out somewhere around 6:30 and 7 o'clock. And at that time, everyone wore a bush. And it looked like he just came out of the barbershop. And he wore Sansa belts. See, those are pants. And he wore Bass Weegians. And those were shoes. I'm just trying to let y'all understand where I'm at with this thing. And he wore the nylon shirts with the big collars. And this is the kind of person that I wanted to be with because he had a woman on each arm, and that was a role model for me. And when the smoke cleared, I found myself at 1901 D Street. And for those of you who don't know, that's where D.C. Jail is right now in D.C. I found myself in Northeast 3 looking out the window wondering how did I get up in there. When I got locked up, I weighed 145 pounds. I looked like J.J. on the Good Times. And my grandmother used to look at me and can count every rib in my body. That's how it was, you know, when I first came around here. And I'm the kind of guy who followed the wrong type of people. And subsequently what had happened is I got a habit. You know, I thank God that for Narcotics Anonymous, because I believe the strange things, man, happen on the way to recovery. You know, when I got here, there were people here who was just like me. And the meetings that I went to, the guys that I kind of gravitated to were the guys who wore those type of clothes, who dressed real nice. And I thought in order for me to be accepted, that I had to come to meetings dressed real nice. There's a meeting in D.C. that started a long time ago where used to be called the Old Trust Clinic. And that's where I went. I started drinking coffee at the Old Trust Clinic. Today I drink a couple Folgers every morning. But I never liked coffee. And when I went to this meeting, they had donuts. And I thought in order for me to get a donut, I had to get a cup of coffee. And I would get a donut and a cup of coffee. And I would get another donut and I'd get another cup of coffee. I started going to meetings that were anniversary meetings, and a lot of them were eating meetings. Because I'm telling you, I'm a guy who came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous with methadone in my system. I had heroin in my pocket, and I just didn't want to get high no more. And I came in the rooms hungry, and those eating anniversaries were a way for me to get something to eat. And I'd get a plate of food, and people would say, put some more on your plate, and I'd get some more on my plate. And when the meeting was over, they gave me a plate to go home with. And this is how I started getting involved. I became really, really engulfed in service when I came around here. See, I believe that people who need people are the luckiest people in the world, and these are the kind of things that were told to me when I first came around here. What had happened to me was in my first year of recovery, I got involved with a woman that I met at Metro Center on a red line going towards Silver Spring. And I'm telling you, 4 weeks ago, I celebrated 11 years. And I remember this just like it was yesterday. And I'm telling you, I had just gotten maybe like 9 months clean when I met this lady. And what had happened is she became what I considered at that time my higher power. She was standing at the platform. She had on a pair of beige leather flats and a blue jean skirt, and she had on a white blouse, and she had no bra. And I'm here to tell you, 30 days later, we moved together. That's some of the insanity that I had to go through when I first got here. And I'm telling you, man, strange things happen on the way to these rooms. I had to go through what I had to go through. And this particular sister, I'm a brother who likes to cook. I would cook breakfast every morning. And I would cook eggs and grits and the toast and thing. And I would drink a big glass of juice, and she would drink a Slitz malt liquor bowl. And I justified that by saying that she wasn't snorting dope. I'm here to tell you, man, after 8 months, we separated. And that was 8 months of purity misery. I came to her and I said, baby, if you love me like you say you love me, leave me. And I was bluffing, and she rolled out. And when she left, she took everything with her. And at that particular time, I was living there with my daughter. And I was living in a one-bedroom apartment up to Silver Spring, Maryland. And the furniture belonged to her, but I had a mattress and a box spring. And my daughter at that time was like 12 years old, and she slept on a mattress and a box spring. And I slept on the floor. And I waited, and I waited until I was able to get me some money together to get me some furniture. And my brother, who was also in a fellowship, had went to a convention that year. And the sister's name was Beverly, and I called it the Beverly Withdrawals. I was sitting on the floor in my apartment withdrawing from this particular relationship. And I remember sitting there on a sofa that I had just bought with the TV on mute, changing the channel. And my brother came from a convention. And he came in there to tell me that he loved me and told me that people were saying that I was in a relapse mode. But he came there to tell me that he loved me, to let me know that he was still there for me, and he left. And when he rolled out, I kind of like picked myself up, and I got back involved into service, and I started going back to meetings. And I guess that's where this topic came in at, because I'm here to tell y'all that before I left D.C., I had just put a woman who I was been in a relationship with for over 8 years. I just put her in a hospital, you know. And it's ironic, man. They had the open mic meeting earlier, and I had to get off what was on me because I came down here, like I told you, to rest. I didn't want to do a whole lot of meetings. I wanted to get a few meetings, but I had just got custody of my son, and this woman that I'm dealing with is dying, man. She has cancer, and the cancer is in her lungs, and it's in her liver, and it's in her brain, and this is also a woman who's in the fellowship. I celebrated 11 years clean, and she just celebrated 12 years. And last July, this is a relationship that 4 years ago it basically had ended. And God has a strange way of showing me the things that I need to do and put me in the places that I need to be. Because last July, we took a cruise, and we cruise every other year. You know, that's because of the help of the God of my understanding and you people. And I'm here to tell you, I cuss y'all out on a regular basis. I'm here to tell you, if you stay around here long enough, you're going to change whether you want to or not. And some things have changed in my life that I really wasn't ready for. And I guess that's some six-step stuff. But last July, we took a cruise. And I had decided that I was going to tell this sister in July that I was ready to leave. And when I came back off this cruise in July, I just found out that the day before I came back, my brother had a heart attack. And when I got back to D.C., I checked my voicemail, and another brother had left a message and telling me that our brother just passed the day before. So this wasn't the time for me to tell his sister that I was getting ready to leave her. And what I did, man, is I stuck around, and we had to bury my brother. And I decided, I said, well, look, maybe this is the time, because, see, I'm a guy who believes that saying when they say that God will not close one door without opening another one. And I'm here to tell y'all, man, I feel like I'm in the hallway, if you can understand what I'm saying. So I had to talk to people, and I had to get outside myself and ask for some help. And I decided that I was going to tell this sister that I had to leave, because, see, I've been around here long enough, and they've told me when I got here that pain is inevitable, but misery is an option, and I just didn't want to be miserable no more. And the brother that's in the fellowship had just celebrated his first year, and we came to my house from his anniversary, And I had made up my mind that I was going to go upstairs and tell this sister that I was getting ready to leave. And she was laying across the bed. And she said, "Ricky, now it's time for you to take me to the hospital." And that's when I took her to the hospital and we found out that she had this cancer. And you know, I just couldn't leave. You know, you people have bestowed some things in me that I wasn't ready to have. And that's some character. And that's some courage. And that's some consideration for somebody else's feelings. So she was in the hospital, man, for 5 days. And I was the first person to get there, and I was the last person to leave. And I'm here to remind y'all that I'm the guy that said that I was getting ready to roll out. At one point, the nurses didn't know who was the patient and who was the visitor. Because I'm the first one to get there, and I would lay in the bed with her. And they would come in there, and sometimes I would be asleep. And they didn't know who the patient and who the visitor was at one point. And after the 4 or 5 days that she was there, I brought her home and I made sure she got her radiation and I made sure that she got all of her treatments. And I'm telling you, man, I'm still going through this situation that I'm really uncomfortable with, and I just didn't want to be there. So what I had to do was I had to get out some outside help. And y'all told me, and it's stated in the literature, that sometimes we got to go outside to get the help. So I started going to see this therapist, and she was able to say some of the things that some of you people have been telling me for the longest time, that sometimes we have to do some things that we really don't want to do. Sometimes we have to keep ourselves in some situations that we really don't want to be in. So I stuck and I stayed. And about a month ago, a month and a half ago, she had an accident. You know, she went smack head on into a brick wall. And the car didn't make a big issue. It wasn't a big issue of the damage in the car. But it's the fact that I felt that she shouldn't be driving. So now I'm here to tell y'all that Tuesday passed. I was on my job, and I got a phone call at about 10 o'clock in the morning. And when I got this call, I was told that by one of her coworkers that I need to come home and take her to the hospital. And when I came home, man, she was sitting there on the steps of my house, and it looked like she had passed out. And this is a woman who was a fashion model. She did a lot of modeling throughout the D.C. area. She was very energetic, and she couldn't stand. And I picked her up, and I got her into the car, and I took her to the hospital. And as soon as the nurses saw her, they knew there was time for her to get admitted. And I sat there from Tuesday, and I told the people on my job that I said, "I'm not going back to work until she comes home." And I'd already told one of my brother who's here with me, I said, "Man, I'm going to have to give up my room because I can't go to Ocean City and enjoy myself knowing that anything could happen to her." And remember, I'm telling y'all, this is the same woman I was getting ready to leave. See, that my cell phone is here with me right now, not to try to get messages from my buddies to find out where I am. My cell phone is here with me in the event that I had to get a phone call, because if I have to go back to D.C., then that's what I got to do. I found out that it's all right to reach outside myself and ask somebody for some help, because I really don't know what to do. You know, I really don't. I brought her home yesterday. And I talked to her doctor on yesterday, and her doctor told me, and he said, "You need to prepare yourself that she's not going to be with you for long." And this is a woman who was real, real vibrant, man. Really involved in service. She went to a lot of meetings, and she was really energetic in her family life. And I watched her go from the runway to the bed. I'm not here to talk about the medical profession, but I think that this chemotherapy is nothing but poison. And they're pumping chemo in her, and it seemed like it's making her sicker. And for me to sit here and watch this is not easy for me to do. So I have to go outside and ask somebody, what do I do? You know, you people told me, "Ricky, you can't go nowhere." And I've decided that no matter how much I've ramped and raved and said that I'm not happy in the relationship, I spent 8 years with this woman, and I just can't leave her. And it's uncomfortable. You know, I'm here to tell y'all that before you, ladies and gentlemen, stands a man who is truly, truly unhappy. And I didn't stay around here 11 years to be unhappy. But I'm in a situation that you people had told me that I got to stick and stay in. So sometimes I don't want to deal with y'all. But y'all are all I got. I found out that saying when they say that people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. See, I need y'all. I'm here right now because somebody heard me share something earlier and they said, "Well, maybe, Ricky, you need to do this workshop." Sometimes we got to step outside ourselves to ask for help. And I found out that there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with me saying that, "Look, I need some help, that I can't do this by myself." I found out that no matter how long you've been around here, that no matter how much clean time you got, you're going to go through some things since you've been here. I'm here to tell you, man, that if anybody has been around here for any length of time and said that you're not going to go through no pain and recovery, tell them Ricky said they're either lying or they're using. Because I'm telling you, it's going to hurt up in here. But I've learned through the help of y'all that I got to stick and stay. You know, I rolled down here last night by myself. And if it was up to me right now at 20 minutes after 6, I'd be in my bed. I would be laying across my bed in my room resting. But I guess God wanted me to stand here and share with y'all. Because I'm telling y'all, man, I'm not all here. I'm in the hallway, if you know what I'm talking about. You know, and it's not easy to be in a hallway. You know, it's not easy to be able to control what's going on with your life, because I know that God has got the plan. But sometimes I say, why am I a part of this equation? You know, a lot of times it's real easy. It would have been real easy for me to step up and say, well, look, I got to roll out here and you got to handle this on your own and you and I are no longer together and I'm gone. But see, I got to live with me. And every time I share this with somebody, they listen. And at the end of the sharing, I always say that I can't go nowhere. You know, this woman right now, as we're standing, she's fighting for her life. And she looked at me yesterday before I left and she said, Ricky, I want you to go. And in talking to her family, we made plans for somebody to be there with her. And she says, Ricky, I want you to go. And I have to go. I'm tired, man. Recovery is a gift, and everybody's not going to get this thing. I'm a guy who came, like I told you, from uptown. I had a $200 a day heroin habit. Today, in the third step of the basic text, it says, at the last paragraph, it says, I want all the good things that the NA Fellowship has to offer. The first time I read that, man, I thought they was talking about the jewelry. I thought they was talking about the clothes. I thought they was talking about the cars. I thought they were talking about the houses. What I had to find out that they was talking about that inner peace. And that's what I'm just trying to get, man. I'm trying to get a dose of this inner peace. Right now, y'all have given me enough strength to be responsible. Y'all have taught me how to stick and stay. Y'all have taught me how to stick around when I don't want to be there. And I sat there the other day and I talked to my therapist and I told her, I said, you know, I don't know why I'm giving you my money, because these people in the room are telling me the same thing that you're telling me. You know, but sometimes, man, that's good for me to sit there one-on-one and to just talk about where I'm at. You know, to talk about the fact that I've just gained custody of my son. And I know a lot of people, a lot of brothers maybe feel that, you know, that they can't get custody of their children. And I'm not here to bash my son's mother. But she's going through her own trials and her own tribulations on her own. But I felt that it's time for my son to come with me. And if anybody's familiar with D.C., I have a 10-year-old son that lives in Berry Farms. And they've already started coming to him and saying, Shorty, hold on to this. And I'm the kind of guy, man, that believes that if my son was to grow up and he would end up in a penitentiary and I did the very best that I could, I'd be all right with that. But if my son was to grow up and end up in the penitentiary and I did nothing to do anything to change it, then I would feel bad about me. So now I've gotten custody of him. So with getting custody of him and dealing with this relationship thing and dealing with my job and I'm in business with my brother, I got a lot on my plate right now. And some people call it running. I had to run to Ocean City. And it just so happens that I'm around the people who can understand me. They say that one addict can best understand and help another addict. See, y'all are people who can understand me. Whether I want to be with y'all or not, this is the safest place for me. Because I can go to my room and I can get some rest, and then I can get up and I can come and get into a meeting. I'm here to tell y'all, man, that I need y'all. I haven't thought about using. That just haven't been a thought, but I'm telling you, I'm real uncomfortable with me right now. So sometimes we got to get outside ourselves and let somebody else help us. Right now, y'all are helping me. You know, I believe in the steps. The steps has really saved my life. And in the second step in the basic text, they only talk about God one time. They said that this power greater than us can either be the group, it can be the program, or you can call it God. Right now, I choose to call y'all that because this is where I am. I could have stayed home, but I was told that I have to do what I have to do for me. And right now, this is where I am. someone heard me share earlier in the open mic, and a brother pulled me up and said that somebody decided, whoever the speaker was whose place I'm taking, decided that they didn't want to do it, and would you go up there and share with them? And I guess this is where I'm supposed to be. So throughout the convention, if y'all see me, man, just give me a hug, man. Throughout the convention, if y'all see me, it's all right to come to me and give me a hug, man. Right now, I'm really uneasy, and I'm not happy. But I know that this too shall pass. I'm going to share this, and I'm going to end. I believe that that Narcotics Anonymous can get along fine without me, but I can't do nothing without y'all. What scares me most than anything in the world is for me to go to an NA meeting and there's nobody there. You know, right now I need y'all, and this is the place to be. My name is Ricky, and I'm a grateful recovering addict, and I'd like to thank y'all for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Ricky. Now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Gino.
Hi, family. My name is Gino, and I'm a grateful recovering addict also. It's real nice to be here today, and I guess the best thing and the first thing I want you to know is they say that, you know, some of us are sicker than others, you know, and I hold on to that one statement real dearly, you know. I'm the speaker that left D.C. at 12 o'clock but really didn't get out of my house until 3 o'clock and got on the road and was calling to say I was going to get here, and I think I got 50 miles. If I do that at 85 miles per hour, I can get here in 33 minutes. I'm an addict. I'm a real, real sick addict, you know. But let me go back a little bit, you know, and tell you why I know I'm a sick addict and why I hold on to that part real dearly. Back in D.C. in detox, everybody know Building 12, right? You know, when I left that 7 days, they had a bed for me at Curt Hall. Curt Hall says, I don't think we want to be responsible for you. I was depressed, suicidal, ready to end it, drug addict. Curt Hall said, why don't you go over to EPRD, and if they give you a clearance, we'll let you come into our 28-day program. EPRD is Emergency Psychiatric Response Unit. Okay, as they sent me over there, the biggest thing I could remember was they had these beds laid down, and they had the straps on them. And I thought for a minute, you know, there was another guy down there strapped down to the gills, you know. And I went in there, and they put us both in the same room. There was about three other people in the room. The difference was I wasn't strapped. You know, and that bothered me for a second. You know, I was like, well, why ain't I strapped up? For real, God was working, because I didn't have no damn place to go. And I knew right then I was exactly where I was supposed to be. You know, a doctor came up. He described it, and he sort of came up and he says, you know what? After detox, a lot of people go through some depression. But I think you were depressed before you even started drugs, and you were medicating yourself. And you've never seen a doctor. See, I carried a long plate, a big plate. And at the first time in my life, I'd sit down and talk to a psychiatrist about that. You know, I mean, I also have custody of both of my children. You know, that's a daughter and a son. I've had custody of them since they were 6 months old. I work. I have sexuality issues that, you know, I did the circle bit. You know, because, you know, in groups I won't say I'm a homosexual or I'm not gay. I am a homosexual that still has sex with women than anybody else. I worked the responsibilities of home, had another junk circle. I was raised with parents that, you know, if you remember Colin Powell, he said, ask but don't tell. Okay. I was raised in a military house that, excuse my hat for instance. See, just went back to home again. Oh, my God. You know, that we had rules in the house. There were manly things to do and unmanly things to do. Me being raised, a man should not carry an umbrella. Yes, sir. When I was 15 or 16 years old, I tried to talk to my father, and I told him, you know, I think something going on here. You know, I mean, some of these teachers, the men ones I like. He said, young man, you better not turn out gay because I'll kill you. I said, yes, sir. We walked up my bedroom, out of my bedroom, and he walked behind me, and we were going upstairs. There were 21 steps upstairs, and I counted each one. I said, well, he's going to stab me now. You know, he might as well get the knife out because, you know, something's up. You know, but out of all that kinds of things, I had to go back in the shell, you know. And my problem happened way before I picked up. I picked up so long ago. You know, I learned things like just, you know, fantasy world. Fantasy world was real good. I can jump into that in a second, you know, at age 3, 4, 5, whatever. You know, the other problem and issues I had was nobody told me that my mother committed suicide when I was 2 years old in my face. Eventually, the way I know all this kind of stuff now is that part of my, aftercare program. Number one on the aftercare program was I was to go in and register at St. Elizabeth's. Everybody know where that is? My other address is 2700 Martin Luther King Avenue. That was some 4 years ago. They said I was supposed to see therapy and do a psychiatrist and a therapist, you know, at least three times a week for the first year. Plus do NA, plus check on another problem. I ain't tell you about that one either, you know, because I have a lot going on, you know. Like I said, I'm triple diagnosed, you know. So I'm also HIV positive. I have been for 14 years. So, you know, I carried that over here, you know, when I was using, you know, but it don't exist. You know, fantasy world's real good. If you don't want to deal with something, don't. You know, but the guilt and the shame is what I'm talking about that I couldn't handle after maybe 10, 15 years. I mean, it was so heavy. It was like Titus, you know. The guilt and shame was spreading HIV around, hit me. The guilt and shame of being on drugs, and, you know, fortunately I had that household, you know, at home, so I figured I could just do the circle bit, you know, go out, use. Don't use your paycheck, because I made real good money, you know, little young kid, 40-ish, you know, money was there, you know, and when all the responsibilities and everything hit me, I said use. Real simple. As long as I don't use my money, I'm all right. So there came hustling. So y'all know what I did. Well, some of y'all may not, you know. So I didn't have anything to sell, so I ended up selling myself. And it didn't matter. You know, like I said, you know, I'm like Geno's, freedom of choice. You know, picking up men, picking up women, picking up both of them, it didn't matter as long as you had some crack. And I went with you. And you could do whatever, depending on how much you had. You know, and that kept me going for a while, you know, you know, and all that until it just got too deep and too strong to bear on my own. You know, I came into this fellowship and started working some steps and learning about things. You know, I learned about some words that I never heard before, you know. But the best thing about that is that, remember, in the first year, I had to go in and do at least an hour, which always lasted 2 hours with my therapist. Because what I found out was, I was sicker than others. I had to have some individual help to get me to get this plate at least sectioned off because all the entities were just falling off. A lot of stuff that I never put on the table before. You know, a lot of things I didn't deal with. A lot of, you know, just abandonment issues. I learned what that was, you know. I learned what resentment was, you know. Why I resented my mother, my current mother, who's my stepmother. You know, because I got to this roots thing, and it's like, who am I? I go to fill out an application, and they say maiden mother. It's like, all of a sudden, I'm shocked. It's like, maiden mother, she's not really my real mother. It's like, oh, no, but my real mother committed suicide. So I don't know if I have high blood pressure on her side of the family. Things like that were just triggered at, you know, among other things, like you know, getting the drugs out of me and trying to deal with HIV and AIDS. And getting educated about that, you know, all them kinds of things. But what therapy showed me to do, it gave me some other tools, how to handle those, how to have coping mechanisms, you know. Same as in the rooms and what you people tell me, you know, but it's just much more better, you know. The other thing is, you know, as far as working on the steps, you know, I looked at my therapist as, you know, this is orally working on my fourth step and fifth step. Every time I go there, you know, it's 4 years later now, and I still have the same therapist. We've gone through many kind of medications to find out what's a good mix for me, you know. you know, and that was another trip, you know, because I did drugs, and I didn't think any kind of medication was needed. The other thing is, you know, it's really hard, you know, because this room, you know, the rooms, I feel like, well, I want to be clean. I don't want to take nothing. You know, I don't want to be on nothing. I don't even want to be on medication. And I have to realize I'm sicker than others. I need medication. You know, I need medication, and I've gone through it. I've gone through the Zoloft and finding myself in my room, in the hallway, fighting ghosts at noon. And I could see them. Now, I've done a lot of acid in my days, trust me. Ain't no acid had me fighting ghosts. You know, so like, and I kept, you know, I was like, nah, something wrong with me. I can't, you know, we free. You know, I was like, I'm paranoid anyway, another word. And it's like, what's up? You know, I'm up here fighting ghosts. It's noon. The kids are telling me that there's nothing there. Come on, Daddy, calm down. You know, and they're there. I mean, physically, you know. And they say, well, maybe we need to change you from Prozac to something else. You know, so I came off Prozac and actually had a withdrawal and went on to something else, a Paxil or something like that. Right now I'm on a mixture that's really pretty good, you know. But you told me about triggers. You know, and one thing I know about why I have to stay on medication is that I don't keep it all together. You know, I don't know how to get out of the house at 12 o'clock no matter what I do, and I got up at 8. I'm compulsive, impulsive. You know, my kids get hell. You know, yes, my sock drawer is coordinatedly colored in colors, you know, from light to dark. My entire house is that way. Anything out of order, I'm lost. Totally lost, you know. And luckily, you people have told me, you know, that what I can't control. So I've been getting to realize this is all mine, and kids going to be kids, you know. And, you know, that, you know, they're not going to play with one PlayStation at a time in one game, and they're not going to put the game back alphabetically ordered the way I want it. You know, so I have to deal with that. But they've taught me that, too. You know, I mean, you know, we just got a new rule in my house. No, the bedroom door has to be open. You know, because I was like, okay, well, that's your room. Just close the door and I'll be okay. You know, I won't freak out. You know, I won't have to go in there and clean it just like a woman. Because, you know, it's out of order. I have to clean it. You know, I can't take unorganized, you know. So that's our new rule we're trying. And, you know, I'm like, okay, if the bed's not made, I'll be okay. But remember, I was raised in a military house. We had bedroom inspections at 07:30 every morning. Yeah, Dad was all right, though, you know. You know, that's another relationship that I was able to work out, you know, because me and my father really had some issues. You know, my daughter's birthday, he came over, and by that, you know, you people told me, you know, I had to make some decisions, you know, and I had to stand for something or fall for anything. So, you know, in this new way of life and in recovery, I have a rule. There's no alcohol cross my door. I'm sorry, I could be a Muslim and you can't bring pig. I could be a vegetarian, I don't even want meat. I could be a non-smoker and I don't want to smoke. Mine is just you can't drink in my house. So a couple years ago, probably three years ago, I think it was, my father came over with his wine and all that to my daughter's birthday party. And it was like we had this big altercation, you know. And remember, I got a whole bunch of rage anyway in here, you know, that like that it comes out, you know. And I was like, no, you can't drink. We had it out, you know, the kids are there. I think she was 10 or 11, you know, and she's freaking out. But why has grandma got to go? And why, you know, the cousin got to go and all this? And he's like, well, fuck you. If you don't want to listen to me, I'll just go home. You know, it's like, I said, no, it's not like that. I mean, you can drink on the porch. You can do whatever. But remember, you're attending your granddaughter's party. And if you can't hold a drink on the porch or outside for one hour, I'm very sorry. He stormed out of the door. By the time he got the door, he stopped, and I told him, yeah, I'm just living by principles and rules the way you taught me to. He came back and says, no, I didn't teach you shit. The only thing I did was teach you how to grow up and be a fucking queer. I tripped out. Remember, I am on medication. Luckily, oh yeah, sometimes that medication don't work either. Trust me, you know. Trust me, and I lose it. I just totally lose it. You know, I'm in more control today than I was back then. You know, but today I could say, you know, we have a wonderful relationship. You know, we all right. We just like this. You know, and both of us has grown. That was the rooms that helped me with that. Of course, that was many hours with therapy too. You know, but that day, you know, luckily, Aunt Yvonne was there and Aunt so and so, and she's like, don't let that shit bother you. You're not gonna let that bother you. Go get the cake and blow the candles out. You know how y'all are. Y'all know how to just snap a person out. You know, it's your daughter's birthday. Ain't nothing supposed to ruin that. Put it on the shelf and think about it later. You know, so you know, we went with the cake. And I thought about it. I thought about these rooms, and I thought about some steps, and I was like, I can't control him. I've been spending almost 40-something years trying to please him, and he already thinks the worst of me. That's his shit. From that day on, that's what it was. You know, and I'm glad to know you think the worst of me, because I'm a whole lot better than what you think. Whole lot better. You know? And, you know, because I know today, here stands a miracle. You know, here stands an HIV person that's been positive since 1985 with two children, 14 and 13. Mama left, of course, you know, came home. She was 9 months pregnant with my daughter, you know, week before Christmas. Always good times, you know, and the house was empty. You know, the house was empty. You know, she had taken everything she wanted, just left what we could survive with. The deal was my son was in a babysitter. So I had picked him up after work, you know, let's go home. Came home, you know, nice house. I mean, nice apartment, two floors, you know, youngin', you know, just rolling, you know. And everything was gone. She was gone. It was like, well, this one time I don't think I'm going to chase her. You know, it's like Christmas in a week. Let's put the Christmas tree up, son. It looks like me and you. And that's the way it's been. You know, sometimes those feelings and those non-feelings are good because, you know, I don't feel it immediately. You know, I'm a little slow. Y'all know that, right? Everybody know I'm slow. So it just didn't kick in, you know. But what kicked in was I had my son with me, you know. And my kids, they tend to be the arrow for me as far as direction, as far as responsibility. I know what I have to do thanks to them, thanks to both of them. My son, Will, he reminds me that I have to have willingness. And my daughter's name is Hope. She gives me the hope to carry on forever. You know, and I'm real grateful for that. And the other thing that these rooms have taught me that we've been on a spiritual path. That spiritual path happened a long time back. And it still continues, and it always will continue. And who's in charge? My higher power. So he's been in charge of everything, you know. I'm really cool with sexuality issues right now. You know, me and religion have a problem, of course, you know, so I don't deal with it, you know, because they tell me I can't be who I am, you know, and I know who I am today. I don't have a problem telling anybody who I am. And if you have a problem with it, please keep it. You know, because I don't need it. You know, I can't carry that. I travel very light. You know, I carry my medication. I have to do that. You know, and I don't put nothing in that luggage that I already took out and left at my therapist's office. She's real good, though. I got to say that, you know, and I'm really proud. This is, you know, like they talk about retreads and all that. This is the first time I've been in recovery. You know, I'm real proud of that. You know, come November, I got 5 years. Yeah. Thank you. You know. And that makes me real proud. You know, but what I think now as far as the spiritualness and the spiritual journey, I think of all God's work in that. I think of how they told me to go get a therapist. And you people told me to follow somebody else's advice. So if that was their advice, I literally did that, you know, I did it, you know. I wasn't on paper and it scared the hell out of me. So I had my own sign-in sheet for the first 90 days, you know. My aftercare program messed up. The day I went to the aftercare program, Assumption, they were closed. They closed up or something. You know, I was like, oh no. You know, then I went around looking for someone to piss for. Because I needed everything possible to stay clean. I mean, I want to pee for somebody to know I'm clean. I mean, please. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm clean now. You know, after the program is over with, I mean, I carried those papers, and I religiously did. I sat up in the front, and I took notes. I'm very observant. You know, I observe people. You don't hear me say a lot unless something's going on, and then you're going to get it. You know, I express what I have. I have a problem, too, according to my sponsor. It's not a problem. He doesn't say it as a problem. But whatever's going on with me, it's going to come out. You know, I don't believe in that some things should be with your sponsor and some things don't belong in a meeting. You know, because if I was out sexing last night with a man for getting money, y'all need to know. And if you see me out on the strip, I'm off the beam. And I don't mind coming here telling you I jump in cars. I don't mind telling you I will take your husband. I will take your wife. See, my shit doubled. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I've been trying not to live that way now. I'm trying to do some things, you know, some things. And, you know, over in there it says, if you don't want to use, don't pick up. That means don't pick up your man, honey. Or your wife, sir. You know. And I have to realize that, too, because I'm, like I say, I'm real sick. And I will use another individual to feel good in a minute. But I don't want love. I don't really want you there. That's why that married man is a whole lot better, because I can send him back home. You know, I know I'm deserving of that now, so that's something I'm working on. You know, my body is a temple now. You know, it's not like I have to worry about those things. You know, I'm not in a relationship and have not been in a relationship, quote unquote. Yes, still been tricking, but my tricking has gotten a whole lot better, according to my therapist. You know, therapy is really good, you know, and she pulled me up one day, and she says, when's the last time you was tricking? I said, oh, it was like, you know, maybe a couple months ago, and, you know, it's this white boy that calls me every month, and he's an old trick, but, you know, it's like $150, and I don't have to do anything, basically, you know. So, you know, she was like, well, don't beat up on yourself. I remember we used to sit here and talk about an hour for how many tricks you had within a week. She said, once a month, you're getting better. But then she hit me with the therapy stuff. She said, you said it was the first of the month? I said, yeah. She said, so how much money did you have? I'm disabled. First of the month, my checks come in and all this. See, and a therapist knows that just like a sponsor. And she knows my story better than a sponsor. She said, so it's not about money, is it? She said, you need to let him go. He can find somebody else to trick with. You know, real good. I haven't tricked with this individual in a year. Yeah, that's growth. That's a lot of growth. That's a lot of growth for a prostitute like me. You know, what I do in my life today is follow God's will. You know, I'm an outreach worker. That same strip that I used to walk on, y'all know where it is from D.C., and jumping cars. I work there now to help individuals and bring them back in and teach them about safe sex, pass out condoms, talk about education, talk about everything, you know, talk about, you know, maybe there's another life for you. And it's very interesting and very rewarding. And I don't know why God placed me in that, but I do know now. You know, it was therapeutic. You know, it's real therapy to go out there and see you a couple years ago. You know, and that keeps it ahead of what'll happen to me whenever I go out. I'll be right there. You know, right there. Yeah, because I know the place. You know, a therapeutic job is always wonderful. It's wonderful because you know it's not about the money. And what's really good is when you know God's will for you. What's really good is know that you're doing something and you had no plan, you didn't have any desire, you didn't know where it came from, but this is what you're doing. And you know what's really strange about that? They pay for my house on Capitol Hill, 15th and East Capitol, 3-bedroom. This is a wonderful program. You know, no, it ain't about the material things. Lies. Lies. You know, it is about the material things, too, for some instances. But what I do know with the bottom of my heart is that all the material possessions I have is from coming in these rooms, listening to your peoples, and seeing a therapist, and seeing a doctor, and getting my teeth fixed, and doing all the things I'm supposed to be doing, responsibility. And when I do that, God does what he has to do. So all those material things aren't my things. They're not really like that. What they are is blessings and benefits for me doing what I'm supposed to do. My two vehicles aren't mine. Both of them are paid for. My two vehicle is the evidence of seeing my first vehicle when I came into recovery. And yes, I cried about it. I can't pay my car note. I can't pay my car note. And I'm driving it 6 months. Somebody said, let it go. Damn that. I'll figure out a way to get caught up. You know, went to pick up the children one day and the tow truck was out there. You know, I said, oh, this is what he mean by letting it go. Hold on. Here's the keys. You ain't got to drag it down the road sideways. Tow truck man said, well, you know, most people come out here with guns ready to beat me up. I said, no, I'm trying to let it go, man. I can't pay for it. For real, for real. I'm real grateful. I'm real grateful that y'all didn't come for 6, 8, 7 months. I mean, you know, come on. You know. So what I learned from that is the next car I get, I better not have anybody attachment to it. You know, so I won't have to watch it go down the road on a tow truck anymore. So I go to auction and buy cars. Benefit, I can't go to the auction and buy cars. You know, benefit, I have a checking account, several. Benefit and all that of doing right. Benefit is what God does for me. You know, for my 4 years in recovery, no, I have not worked except for myself as a consultant, as an agent, as an HIV provider, and helping in HIV for agencies. All this before recovery, before therapy, who knows? Who knows? But just like everything on that spiritual path, I know someone was placing people in my lives, someone was placing jobs or available positions. From here on, you know, is that about time to close? You know, they're giving me this time to close, and they have to do thank you, you know.
Okay.
You know, like anybody, you know, I mean, if you see me out there, make sure I'm going to the right place and the right position and all that kinds of stuff, because I get lost, you know. I lose my attention. I have a hard time focusing, all that kinds of stuff, but I'm getting so much better. And therapy has been able to give me some tools. And that's what you have to remember, that, you know, if you are dealing with some issues, you know, I mean, like me, you know, you need to work on them. If you got a car, don't take it to a television guy. You take it to a mechanic, you know. If you need your mind fixed, don't worry about therapy. That's what it's about, you know. And I had to get over that thing because, you know, that's an African culture thing, you know. It's like, what, go to therapy? We don't do that. That's the people who are across the, you know, across the tracks. We don't do that. So first of all, I have to get over that. But it was wonderful, like I said, because I was willing to do anything not to be caught in my garage again with the car running and the pipe hand in my hand and not caring which one blew up first. I would do anything to keep this recovery that I've got. I would do anything in the world just to hold on to that sense of security, you know, because I feel real good, you know, and there's, you know, glimpses of times where, you know, it's all beautiful. It's all beautiful. It's just like walking down the sidewalk. You take a choice. You can go on the sunny side or you can go in the shade. I tend to walk in the sun. You know, I'm going to end, if I can bring the thoughts together and calm down, you know, with this, you know. Any kind of help you need to stay clean, you got to get it. And you got to follow your higher power. Because if he puts that person in those thoughts, you know, because that's what keeps me together to this day. You know, my name is Gino. I'm a triple diagnosed addict. And it's a blessing to be here. It's a blessing to talk to you all. And I hope you got something. Thank you.
We have a round of applause for both of our speakers.
Can we close in the usual manner with the Just for the Day reading? And I'm sorry. We do have some more time. Would anyone like to share?
I will.
Okay.
How much time do we have? 15 minutes. I can't talk for 15 minutes.
You don't have to.
Okay, well, I'm Tara. I'm an addict. And I just wanted to say that I have a dual diagnosis, too. And I did something really stupid. I stopped taking my medicine. And this morning, I didn't sleep. I wasn't going to be able to come to the convention because I didn't sleep all night last night. And I had a psychotic thought. And when I had this psychotic thought, I called the hospital immediately and said, I had a psychotic thought. And that scared me because I do not want to be back on the psych unit again. I hate the psych unit, you know. And I don't want to be back on there. They don't let you smoke in there. It's boring. You know, it's so much better out here. And it was my fault, and I had to explain that I didn't take the medicine and everything like that. But I have a lot of stress. I'm finishing college, and it's hard. But I'll keep coming back.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to share?